Kate McClellan, pro wedding planner with over 16 years of experience helping more than 400 couples down the aisle. I started Planning Collective to help all couples get through the overwhelm of wedding planning by sharing my actionable tips and tools that I've used over the years working with my clients. We'll focus on getting rid of what I like to call FOWO, the fear of wedding oversight. This is an unfortunate condition that almost every couple will suffer from at some point. Let's get you back to enjoying the planning process. Here we go. This episode is brought to you by the Wedding Planning Blueprint Course, the new way to plan your wedding. I've been a professional wedding planner for almost 20 years now, and though nothing can beat the excitement of a wedding day, my favorite moments are sharing the real wedding planning experiences and tips that no one else is talking about. I designed this course to help take you from feeling lost and overwhelmed to educated and in control of your wedding plans. The course includes 24 lessons that are structured to help you first create your wedding planning foundation and then build upon it in an intentional way so that you don't make one of the most common and expensive mistakes, planning your wedding backwards. The newest feature in the course, Wedding Chat GPT, allows you to ask your wedding planning questions and get professional answers 24/7. The answers are pulled from the course content, which makes the responses reliable and actionable. This will be a true game changer, saving you time and money while you plan your big day. To see a full list of what's included in the course, head to planningcollective.com/WPB course. Working with a wedding planner would literally cost you thousands, but now you can have the expert advice and tips for under $150. And while the course is a steal, I do recognize that that's still an investment. Make sure you grab our free download, Expensive Wedding Planning Mistakes, and I can promise that that alone will save you the cost of the course. You can find our free guides at planningcollective.com, and I look forward to helping you plan your wedding. Hey guys, Kate here. Welcome back to another episode of the Wedding Planning Collective podcast. In today's episode, I'm going to give you a little preview from one of our lessons in the all-new Wedding Planning Blueprint course. I'm going to share with you Lesson 3 of Module 3, which is all about your hotel blocks. Most couples will find the need to have a room block of some sort. This refers to a group of hotel rooms at one or more hotels that are held for your wedding guests, most often at a discounted rate. Here we'll talk about the two most common types of room blocks and some things that you'll want to make sure to consider before signing your contract with the hotels. Courtesy blocks are the most common type of room block, and it's an arrangement when a hotel simply agrees to put a certain number of rooms aside for you at no charge. Your guests will make their own reservations, typically referencing your last names, and make the payments on their own. The hotel will keep track of these reservations and will be able to provide you with a list so that you know how many rooms are being reserved, which is really helpful if you would like to provide welcome bags or a letter for the guests. Most hotels will honor these blocks up until 30 days before the wedding, at which point they will be released for others to reserve. You're not financially responsible for any rooms that are not reserved from your block. Many hotels will still honor the discounted rate after that 30-day mark. They just can't guarantee that they will have them available. The second type of block is called an attrition block. And while this type is very similar to the courtesy block, there is one major difference that can cost couples a lot of money if it's overlooked. Having an attrition clause in your block holds you financially responsible for any rooms that are not reserved, which can add up to a significant amount of money if you're not careful with your predictions. While each clause is unique, the most common states that if you do not fill 80% of the rooms in your block, the hotel has the right to charge up to the regular room rate as opposed to the discounted block rate. For example, if you have 10 rooms in your block and only 6 rooms reserved, the hotel will charge you for those 2 rooms that were not picked up. In my experience, this is most common in smaller, privately owned boutique-style hotels as opposed to the larger chains, but make sure to review your contract for this clause before signing. What other details do you need to consider while you're working on your hotel blocks? Of course, the wedding date is important, and you've most likely looked into this before selecting your date, but make sure to see if there are any other major events on the same weekend of your wedding in your city. For most major cities, there will always be something going on, But there are some events that will dramatically impact your ability to secure a room block. For example, here in Detroit, the major arenas in the area are all in the same area, and they're the ones that are going to host large tours, concerts, or big events. In the past, we've had issues with getting blocks set when there are big names in town. The hotels know that it will be a big weekend for people to stay downtown, and they don't want to promise a lower rate or a certain percentage of their rooms when they know they will be able to book them at a higher rate for concert goers. Another unexpected issue we ran into while trying to secure rooms in Ann Arbor, we discovered that the wedding was the weekend of a large electrical convention. We literally called every hotel in the area, and we needed to split up the reservations over several hotels to ensure we had enough rooms for the guests. This is typically not going to be a big reason to change the date of the wedding, but definitely something to consider, especially if you find yourself in one of the situations just described. One great alternative to the hotel block that's becoming more and more common for groups is to arrange Airbnbs to make a fun weekend out of connecting with friends and family. You can also look into reserving hotels in the suburbs or neighboring cities, though that will most likely involve securing transportation to get the guests back and forth. Let's talk about how many rooms you need to have in your hotel block. Most couples will overestimate the number of rooms they need, and there are a few things that will impact your number. If you're having a destination wedding or a wedding that the majority of your guests will have over an hour drive to get to, you're going to see that you'll need rooms for a majority of these guests. For weddings that are local, with most guests living close by, you'll still want to consider a hotel block, as it's likely some guests will not want to drive home, and it's nice to have a central gathering spot for activities the day before and after the wedding. If you're working with a courtesy block, a safe way to estimate the number of rooms you need is take the total number of out-of-town guests that you're expecting and divide that number by two. If you're subject to an attrition clause, lower that number so that you don't end up stuck with a hefty bill. Keep in mind that some of your guests will choose to stay with family, maybe book an Airbnb, or possibly book a different hotel that they have points with or a different connection. When choosing a location for your hotel block, many variables will come into play. So make sure to think about what the priorities are for your wedding weekend. If your wedding is not at a hotel venue, proximity to the venue is typically the number one concern that couples think about. You'll not only want to keep the location of the venue in mind, but also make sure that it is in a central area for other activities. Many of our couples want to make sure that things are convenient for the guests that are traveling in, so we'll seek out hotels that have an option for a rehearsal dinner or a brunch on site or within walking distance. Even if you're hosting your wedding at a hotel ballroom, you may need to consider a secondary hotel. This might be because your venue can't guarantee enough rooms, but also make sure to keep price points in mind. If you're at a higher end venue, whether this is for your hotel block or the actual event, the room cost might be a stretch for some of your guests, especially if they're staying for multiple nights. I typically recommend our couples secure two different hotel blocks, ideally with at least a $50 a night price difference. Most couples are willing to splurge a little bit for their hotel on their wedding weekend, but your guests might not be able to. Keep in mind any potential added costs in your decision too, such as valet, resort fees, or Wi-Fi charges. Your guests will definitely appreciate it. Once you've decided on the hotel property, they will have you sign an agreement or a contract that will make it official. The main things to look for in your agreement are, number one, is this a courtesy block versus one with an attrition clause? Number two, are the dates correct? It's always a good idea to have about half of the rooms held on the wedding night also held the night before, especially if you have many out-of-town or out-of-state guests that might need to stay multiple nights. Number three, is the agreed-upon rate correct? Number four, is the breakdown of rooms correct? I recommend a mix of doubles and king rooms so that you can accommodate singles, couples, and families that might be traveling. Once you have the block secured, you need to get that information out to your guests. Most hotels will offer two ways to book through the room blocks. First, the guests can call in and reference your last names and the wedding date, and they should be able to pull up the special rate for them. Second, many hotels will offer you a custom link that you can send to your guests to make their reservations. This is super convenient, as guests can do it at any time without having to make a phone call. So how do you get that information to your guests? Probably the easiest and most common way these days is to post it on your wedding website. The sites are so common these days, most of your guests will know to search for it. You can also share the link on your Save the Dates, social media, although be very cautious that this will go to everyone, not just those you have invited, via email or on an accommodations card with your wedding invitation. While we're talking about hotel blocks, let's talk a little bit about wedding party suites and things that you need to keep in mind for your rooms. Whether you opt to have an official room block for your guests or not, most couples will opt to stay at a hotel the night of the wedding. Many plan on using this room to get ready earlier in the day, so I wanted to share a few tips with you to keep in mind as you're making your plans. For the ladies, the bridal suite is typically where the organized chaos of hair and makeup will happen. Because of this, you'll most likely need to reserve the room for the evening before, as hotels won't be able to guarantee an early check-in. It's not likely that you'll be able to have a normal check-in time and still accommodate your hair and makeup schedule. You'll also need to take a tally of how many people will be in the suite for your hair and makeup and ensure the room you reserve will be big enough to accommodate everyone. Typically, this includes everyone in the wedding party that wants to participate, but you may want to include moms, grandmas, or other family members and friends. And don't forget to add in the actual hair and makeup team into the count as well. If the hotel does not have a suite available that's large enough or that you can get access to early enough the day of the wedding, you can ask if they have a boardroom or a conference room that you can use for this. Ideally, you'll have access to a room with good lighting. Your photographer, along with your hair and makeup team, will definitely appreciate that. And finally, when you check in, get extra copies of the room key for your wedding party and certain vendors. This is important in particular if you're at a hotel that requires a key to access the elevator. No one has time to run down to the front desk for a key when you get locked out or every time a vendor arrives. It's also very helpful to give the front desk the names of your wedding party and the vendors that might need access to your room so they don't need to reach out to you every time someone asks for your room number. For vendors, this is typically going to be your hair and makeup team, your photographer, your videographer, and your wedding planner. And that is just a little preview of Lesson 3 and Module 3 of the Wedding Planning Blueprint course. In addition to those lessons, we also talk about transportation, which includes the three main transportation categories, as well as some additional tips you'll need to think about prior to booking and scheduling any car services, as well as the timing that you're going to need to take into consideration when it comes to travel and accommodations on your wedding day. I do hope that you'll join us in the Wedding Planning Blueprint course. But in the meantime, if you have any other questions you'd like to have answered on the podcast, head over to the Wedding Planning Collective Facebook group and ask them right there. And if you found this podcast episode helpful, please take a quick second to rate and review on the platform you listen on. It would mean the world to me, and it will help other couples find the wedding planning tips they need. Thank you so much, and I will see you in the next episode.